the glass. Here's Kyle, lines it up. Yes! Kyle Lowry connects, and he'll head to the line with a smile and a hug to Fred VanVleet. Siakam sets a screen. Here's Kawhi. The monster slam by Kawhi Leonard. Get it out of the way.
A Toronto rout to take a 3-2 lead in the Eastern Conference semifinals. The Raptors dominate the 76ers 125-89, the final.
Welcome to another episode of That's a Wrap Podcast. I am your overly jubilant co-host, Jay Rosales. That person chuckling is our producer, Jay. What's up?
Jubilant. Oh, ecstatic.
And the quiet for now, but about to get really excited, other co-host of mine, Dre. What's up, buddy?
I'm going to give a shout out to Jimmy Wen. As a 76ers fan, I followed him on Facebook, and he has the comment, just think that Leonard could have been a Sixers, or a Sixer, he had a typo there, if we threw Ben in the trade to the Spurs. That's something to marinate on for the rest of the episode.
Boo-hoo to you.
Some beginning thoughts of the largest lead we've ever had in a postseason. Almost 40 points against the 76ers. We're 3-2 now. Let's get this going like the Raptors did. I'm ready.
So good so that Jeremy Lin got a three. Meek Mills, good lord. Jody Meeks with the three. And even Moreland had some great minutes against Boban. Like, this was a blowout. Holy crap. Sorry, Jay. I'm just too excited.
No, it's all good. It's good. We should absolutely show off how excited we are. And in fact, Toronto played Philly right out of the gym that Meek Mill probably could have stepped in for them. So,
yeah, right.
Jumping into some of the, and it's funny because like a couple of the points you guys already said are some of the numbers I want to point out. First and foremost, our starters plus our sixth man of this series, Serge Ibaka, each and every one of them scored in double figures. This is what we were talking about. This is what Lowry and Nurse and even Kawhi were talking about after game three's embarrassing loss was, You know, other guys need to step up. And we saw a bit of that in game four with four of the starters hitting double figures. And now everyone was clicking and it was a sight to see the ball just, you know, swinging around and the threes. Oh my gosh, they finally started falling.
Finally. My God.
And that is actually my second number, which is free fries. Finally. It happened twice during the Magic series, and this is the first time this has happened. It feels like it's been forever. So 16 for 40, 40%, their second highest three-point percentage of the playoffs. This is the Raptors team we've gotten used to since the All-Star break. This is the Raptors team we have just enjoyed watching and has gotten us all excited about the Raptors' championship aspirations this year. So...
And if I could step in for a second, Jay, I remember every time that Brett Brown has said something in pregame, he's always harped about this is the best team in the NBA for three-pointers. And yes, Raptors hasn't shown it for the entire series, and it was bound to happen. I'm so glad it happened on our home court.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. And, you know, I don't know if Brett Brown was trying to, you know, do some sort of a reverse jinx, but it totally backfired because, yeah, 16 threes it was a sight to see it in front of the home crowd. That's just the cherry on top, right? But something that I don't think we've talked about enough on this podcast, you know, because we're always talking about, and it's fair at all, you know, talking about Kawhi and talking about, you know, who is going to help him out on offense. The one thing that has been consistent, fairly consistent throughout these playoffs, is our defense. And we held the Sixers under 90 points. Now, let me put that in context for you. Heading into the series, Philadelphia was the number one offense in the playoffs. They were destroying Brooklyn. And it was a classic case of, you know, great offense versus great defense. And the Raptors, for the fourth time out of five games, held them under 100. For the eighth time out of 10 playoff games this year, they've held their opponent under 100 points. So kudos to this defense. It is, by the way, the number one defense now in the playoffs, and that was heading into this game. So our numbers improved that much more. So things are good, looking really good, boys. Those are my three stats, and I think Jay, your three positives have some similarity.
It's kind of hard to even pinpoint, like, where do you go, right? But I want to say that the very first and most important one has to be Kyle Lowry. The reason why I say that is because right off the bat, Kyle Lowry was aggressive, and he set the tone. He was like a motor out there, getting shots up, you know, passing in at the right place, making right decisions, being the gentleman on the floor. He set the tone in basically off the tip, and the Raptors didn't really look back. I think the biggest lead that we gave up to the Philadelphia 76ers was 7. The biggest lead that they gave up to us was about 40. So I feel like that has to deal with Kyle. Yes, Kawhi is going to give him monster numbers. He was only one with double digits, but, you know, it was kind of a human game. I think Kyle Lowry deserves a lot of credit for how he played, how he set the tone for the rest of his team. Jay, you already said it before, the threes. It was so good to see some threes finally drop from, you know, even Fred VanVleet, Marc Gasol, but especially the Green Ranger, Danny Green. 5 for 7, he looked like he was in a flow. He was looking for a shot, and each time that a Raptor was double teamed, Danny Green was wide open, and it was so nice that they knew where Danny Green was. I guess Nurse wanted the ball to go to him as much as possible, and he was relentless. Every single time you saw a three go up by Danny, you felt like it was going to go in. So it's so good to see him finally hit his stride for this series. And again, like you said, Jay, you already said it, team defense throughout this entire game, 12 steals, 19 turnovers for Philly, 42 rebounds for us, which means that we were finishing each play. So whenever we played good defense, we didn't give up an offensive rebound. We limited the Sixers to 5 offensive rebounds, which is humongous. Yes, there's going to be some, you know, tough shots that Embiid and Butler is going to make, but let them earn it, right? If we're going to get them to do some contested threes, i.e., you know, JJ Redick only had 3 points, each time they miss, you got to finish those plays and get those defensive rebounds, and that's what they did. And I'm feeling so good. I don't know, whatever negative that you're gonna say, Dre, I don't know if it's gonna damper any of my feelings, bro.
Well, yeah, I'm not gonna be a negative Nancy this episode. Good news, guys, this is the first episode in a while where whatever negatives I had, Nurse and the gang figured it out, not even in the second half, like in the second quarter. Like, it was fast. And they're very minor negatives. First off, silly passes are a no-go. So, you know, in the first quarter, when the 76ers had their brief lead, a lot of that was from turnovers. There was a point where we had 5 turnovers within, like, less than a quarter, which wasn't looking too great at first. A lot of that came from silly passes that got intercepted. But guess what? That changed very quickly. Secondly, tighter timeouts. I was kind of hoping Nick Nurse wasn't going down that route again, especially when the 76ers had a 10-2 run in the first quarter again. Guess what? That was fine later on. The timeouts were much more properly timed. And at that point, it wasn't even so much how do we stop their run as opposed to how do we destroy them some more. So, I mean, everything was fine afterwards. Thirdly, and again, it didn't really matter after a little bit, foul trouble. Because guess what? At first, we were accumulating some fouls. But guess what? We were systematically taking out Simmons, Embiid, all of their players by what I was saying last episode, properly setting up the fouls the way Gasol can, the way Lowry can, and apparently the entire team did this entire game, and it was beautiful. So those are some very minor things to look at. Don't let the fouls accumulate on your end. You can do it to them as much as you want, as long as it works. The timeouts, if necessary, and silly passes when you have a bit of a run yourself, slow it down a bit. And guess what? They had great ball movement. They figured it out. And what an insane lead. So very, very minor. But otherwise, this was an A-plus performance for the Raptors, something we rarely get in the playoffs. A perfect game for us, I would argue.
I'm glad you brought up Nurse, because I know that you were, you guys said this, I think, Jay, in the first or second episode of this series, you said how Nurse should have Embiid and Gasol chained to the foot. They should be, whenever Embiid is on, you have to throw in Gasol and vice versa. That's what they did in this game. Whenever Embiid was in, Gasol, boom, right in there. And you could tell, I mean, okay, fine. Embiid may have been sick, boo-hoo, don't matter. If you're not on a stretcher, you're going to play. But they took full advantage of it. And, you know, the difference between Embiid having a bad game and Kawhi having an okay game, Philly's going to lose, and the Raptors are going to have the best game of this series.
But, like, can I just say something about that? Because, again, as a 76ers fan, this is why I'm pushing for the Raptors to go through. They're not mature enough to overcome the flu and stuff. Look at Dirk Nowitzki, 2011. Guy had a high, high fever to the point that the guy was going to pass out. Beat the Heat, the deadly three of the Heat. Literally his temperature and the team. You can't just go on the court like that. You know, you're doing airplanes one game, and in the next game, you're like not giving it your all. And Charles Barkley, when he's on, he's on. Former 76er Charles Barkley. Guy said he's coming onto the court like death. It's going to show. Redick got like 3 points. Simmons, I mean, where was that guy? Obviously, Embiid didn't have a good game either. The only guy who showed up was Buckets, and he barely had his kind of show-stopping performance that he usually does. We shut them down, and they've got to be a much more mature team than this.
Well, speaking of Simmons, and I know he's not supposed to be a scorer, but he's going to have to become one. I mean, I don't think that'll make much of a difference. But do you guys know there's a player on the Raptors who has the exact same scoring average as Ben Simmons? Who do you think it is?
Fred VanVleet.
That's just disrespectful.
Sorry.
Serge Ibaka.
The answer is Marc Gasol. They both have a total of 47 points. Now, that's fine if you're Marc Gasol, because that's not your role. You're about the fifth scorer of the five starters. But for Ben Simmons, he's got to lead by example. And I know he's a pass first guy. I know he doesn't have an outside shot, but credit the Raptors defense, right? I mean, he's got that style, that downhill style where he needs to get to the bucket to get anything, and they're preventing that, mm-hmm. right? And that's a huge testament to our defense and, you know, our ability to shut down, you know, their playmaker, right? So that's a great number. And again, if I go back to that number of 47 points total over five games, just a reminder, Kawhi got 45 in game one.
Wow.
Wow. But, you know, to that point, good job for the Raptors to, you know, punish, or I guess good job for Kawhi for making Ben Simmons work. Because if you're playing so hard on defense, you're not going to have the energy to play that type of, you know, offense too, right? So that's why you can only see Jimmy Butler going off, because everyone else is trying so hard on defense, trying to stop Kawhi. So, Ben Simmons definitely does have to score more, but that's not his role. Like, or I guess maybe it should be his role. Like, he doesn't have an outside shot. All he's doing is trying to drive. He's going to get those layups. Yeah, that's fine. But I mean, there's nothing to it. Whoever's guarding Ben Simmons, all he has to do is kind of drop back and let him shoot, right?
Yeah, and one more point, quick point about Jimmy Butler. In each of the last three games, he had 9 field goals made. So game two is 9 for 22. In game three, he was 9 for 15 in the blowout win for Philly. In the last game, he was 9 for 18. In this game, he was Philly's leading scorer, only had 6 of 16 shooting. So, you know, we held him under 50%. And if that's the best that Philly could throw at us in a... you know, this is not, your season's not on the line with this game, but now you're on the brink of elimination. So, I mean, again, kudos to the Raptors and their continued success on defense. And my gosh, guys, can they just please wrap this up on Thursday? Because I want a game-free Sunday, Mother's Day, by the way.
Yeah. Yes. Quick question, though. Do you think a lot of this... I guess where we are now with 3-2 lead going into Philly for an elimination match, do you think this has to do with, I guess, the amount of veteran presence that the Raptors have?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I guess like the maturity level?
Dre, I'll let you take this one first, but yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Maturity is a big factor because I don't like when a lot of people on Facebook say, oh, you won and you're treating it like you won the championship, boo, boo, boo. And it's like, let fans have their time. But if you're going to celebrate like this and then just completely, no disrespect, wimp out like this in a game like this, this is what happens. You get slammed. And I think part of that has to do with, look, the other game, I sincerely think Nick Nurse was outcoached. But I believe he understood this and lo and behold, found a way to outcoach somebody like Brett Brown, who still isn't playing a player like Marjanovic because of one freaking mistake he did. What about all these other mistakes other players do? You know, like you're not going to put the tallest dude in the NBA currently playing in the playoffs. They're almost comfortable with the game 2 and 3 that they had, where they're going to make up for the lack of defense by having an offensive defense, a swarming of bees as opposed to a wall. And now that the cracks are showing and they don't have the oomph, I guess, to pull off a game like this, they're going to have to show it in the next game, because otherwise, in Philadelphia, I foresee another absolute destruction. Because let's not forget, all of this happened with Ibaka getting an elbow to the head, with Siakam not being 100%, his legs killing him, and his jumper is not quite as good as it was, yet it's still really good. And Kawhi didn't have a great game either, for considering what he has. They're going to be better in a few days. Philly has to step it up, otherwise they're getting destroyed, and they've got to think of some big moves next season to get a better defensive presence. And look, you outcoach a dude once, you've got to figure out change, and Brett Brown's just not doing it.
Brett Brown did a great job of adjusting after game two and you know, sticking true to that in game three. But in terms of, and going back to your point, Jay, about the question of experience, I think that it absolutely wins out for Toronto here. I mean, that was one of our many advantages that we had over the Sixers. And I think that you're finding that, right? The difference between how these teams play when the chips are down. Mm-hmm. You know, the Raptors easily could have, if the Raptors were a younger squad, they would have folded in game four. Someone like a Kawhi, who's been here and done that before, has the capability to hit that, you know, 3-point dagger in the final minute. And a quick side note, Dre, your point about Boban, I get it. He's bigger than anyone on Game of Thrones, but he's also moves like that giant in Game of Thrones. So, I mean, it's Ibaka would just run circles around him. They would definitely pick on him in any pick and roll situation. So I can see why they're not playing him, but that's you know, if we want to take it a step higher, that's really, you know, you can start to point some fingers at Elton Brand and the way I'm not going to say constructed this team. I'm going to say he deconstructed this team, because they lost a lot of depth when they kind of ended the process and went for Harris and Butler. And now we're seeing that, right? I mean, we were talking about this just before we started recording the pod, that our bench, when both all bench lineups came in, the Raptors increased the lead to 40. And that's not to say that our bench was all of a sudden amazing again. It's just our bench is actually better than their bench. It's just that when it comes to playoff time and the games get more intense, you're barely using your bench. So it's just like, really, your top two or three guys against our top two or three guys, and how do they mesh and how are they used in the game situation? But if you look all the way down to the end of the bench, we have a deeper bench, and that's how we were able to extend the lead out to 40. Sorry, going back to your question, Jay, it's experience, and you know, I expect us to you know, bring it in game six, and I think we'll be able to close out the series.
Same.
Oh, yeah.
Same. All right. So let's hope for a free Mother's Day and a non-stressful Mother's Day. So let's close it out on Thursday. But until then, guys, let's enjoy this one. That's a wrap.